chant the first verse of the Gita Janam. Together, we can chant it together. Om Parthaya Pratipotitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitam Litavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvam Anusantadami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadvaishini. We're on verse 14 of chapter 2. Matras parashastu kaunteya. Matras parashastu kaunteya. Shitoshna sukadukkadaha. Shitoshna sukadukkadaha. Agama payino nityaha. Agama payino nityaha. Tamstitikshaswaparata. Tamstitikshaswaparata. Matra sparashaha tu kaunteya. Shita kushna sukha dukha daha. Agama apayinaha anityaha. Tan titikshaswa bharata. So, He Kaunteya is a name for the son of Kunti. So, for the Sanskrit students, if you notice that vriddhi, the first vowel there, Kaunteya, that will often mark a patronymic. So, Kunti is Arjuna's mother. So, Kaunteya, and that aya affix also. So, that if you see a vriddhi, and aya is also an affix for a patronymic. That's that vriddhi especially is a marker. So He Kaunteya in the vocative singular, He son of Kunti, the name for Arjuna, and so Krishna the Lord is addressing him. He says, Matra Sparashaha, compound, nominative singular, Matra Sparashaha. The matras are the sense organs. That by which the objects are the sense objects are measured. So the matra is a name for the sense organs. So the matras, the sense organs, and then sparsha means the contacts. The contacts, sparsha means to touch or to contact something. So the contacts of the sense organs coming into contact with the sense organs coming into contact with the sense objects is the idea for matra sparshaha. So if you take that as a compound, matra sparashaha, you can take it as a shashti tatpurusha, which means a genitive relationship, showing that the sparsha, the contact of the sense organs. Or you can also take it just as a dwandva, the sense organs and their sense objects. Shankara takes it both ways. But in any case, it's going to be the sense organs contacting, you know, the sense objects. So these sense objects, my contact, your contact with your contacts with the sense objects, he kaunteya, shita, cold, ushna, hot, sukha, pleasure, dukkha, pain, daha, nominative plural, both are nominative plurals. They are the daha, when you've got a compound ending in daha, in the nominative plural here, they are givers of, from the root da to give, they're givers of these pairs of opposites, shita and ushna, sukha and dukkha. There's two different, if this is a double dwandva, shita and ushna, cold and hot, and sukha and dukkha. So these two, why the two different types of opposites? Because there's a difference. With opposites that are represented by hot and cold, right? Those opposites sometimes cause pleasure, sometimes cause pain. It's called aniyata rupa. It's not definitely that what is cold is going to cause you pain or make you unhappy. Say you're going skiing and you want it to be nice and cold so the snow is firm. So you want the cold weather. You know? So the cold makes you happy. You know? And say hot weather that melted all the snow would make you unhappy. The idea is, for some of the pairs of opposites, a given opposite will sometimes make you happy and sometimes make you sad. There's no set rule. It depends on your relationship with the object. You see that? So hot can sometimes make you happy, sometimes make you sad. Cold sometimes make you happy, sometimes make you sad. So with most of the pairs of opposites. But then there's a pairs of opposites like pleasure and pain. With these kind of opposites, pleasure is meant to make you happy. It's like saying, if I make two other words, these opposites, happiness and sorrow. These are called niyata rupa. It means happiness makes you happy, sorrow makes you sorrowful. Right? Whereas hot and cold, those opposites sometimes make you happy, sometimes make you sad. So he's in the spectrum of opposites that the world has to provide, we have these two different sets, right? Some that will always make you happy or always make you sad, and those that have nothing to do with that. It has only to do with your relationship to the opposite, like hot and cold. So here Krishna says, hey, Kaunteya, you know, all of these sense contacts means all of these objects that you experience, all of your experiences is basically what he's saying. Everything that you contact through your sense perception, all of these are giving sukha and dukkha, happiness and sorrow. You know? All of them give you opposing experiences. Right? There's never just one side. You know, every experience, look at it like this. Every experience that you have has its counterpart. It has its opposite. There's a spectrum for every single experience. So for some of that spectrum that has the opposite on this side or the opposite on that side, you're happy with this one sometimes, and you're happy with this one sometimes, and sometimes you're miserable with this one and miserable with this one. It just depends on how you're relating to it. And then there are other situations that are themselves pleasurable or painful, producers of pleasure and pain. And that's what we call niyata. It's meant to produce pain. It produces pain. It's not like it produces pleasure in some people. It produces pain. It produces pleasure. That's what it's meant to do. So there's this whole spectrum of experiences that the universe has to give you. And that spectrum is complete and all-pervasive. So it's not as though you can escape the spectrum of opposites. If you say opposites, you have to include everything in the middle, right? Hot and cold is such a good example for that, because you can really hot, less hot, less hot, less hot, warm, 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 cool, 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 frozen, right? Every experience is like that. It, you know, everything has its counterparts. So all you could say all experiences on a continuum. So that's what he's saying here. All of these experiences that you have, all of them, first of all, every one of them, these experiences, is born, first off, of the contact of your sense organs with the sense objects. That's what's causing this in the first place. You're having experiences, this is what causes the experience. Your sense organs contact the sense objects. And then these contacts give a variety of experiences. From hot to cold, opposing experiences, the creation itself gives opposing experiences. And then there are also these niyata rupas of pleasure and pain. So that's what we have here. Okay, that's what the universe is all about, basically. So then he says, that being the case, then he says something about them. He says, agama apayinaha, in ending noun in the accusative, in the nominative singular, right? A compound, agama, okay? Agama means they are coming, And apayinaha means they are going. All of these sense experiences that we have, there is something to realize about them. Every single one of them comes and goes. Just think of it. Is there any experience that you've ever had that has come and just stays? It doesn't. Every single experience, sensory experience that you have, that one thing they have, all of them have in common, is that they all come and go. Okay? So, agama apayinaha. And what does that mean? They are anityaha. Nominative plural again. Anityaha. Ending out. Anitya means the unnegates. Nitya means that which is timeless, free from time, eternal. Never changes. It is, period. Anitya means what? The unnegates the nitya. They are time-bound. Right? They come and they go. They are time-bound. They don't last. It doesn't matter what the experience is, whether it's a good experience or a bad experience, a pleasurable experience or a sorrowful experience, a cold or hot. Whatever the universe has to offer you, and whatever judgment you may have on it, or in whatever way you experience it, positively or negatively, whatever it may be, the fact is that it comes and goes. And since it comes and goes, it is non-eternal. It is anitya. Right? That's just the fact of the universe. And there's nothing anybody can do about it. Right? So that's the first thing to understand. He's just giving what is an absolutely obvious reality of the nature of the universe that we experience. There's nothing you can say about it. Nobody's going to say, well, no, my experiences don't come and go. No, my experiences are free from time. They're eternal. Who can say it? Who can say that there aren't opposites? Who can say there isn't pleasure and pain? Who can say that one object sometimes causes me pleasure and sometimes causes me pain? We all know it. So what he's making are just some general statements about the nature of your experience in the creation that is irrefutable. There's nothing you can do about it. It's just simply telling you how it is. So then he says, having said, this is how it is, and everybody goes, yes, this is how it is. Then he says, hey, Bharata. Bharata means, you know, the one who's really carrying the whole Hindu tradition. And Bharata. Bharata is the land of India, the whole culture. So it's a name, it's an address for Arjuna and for others too, but hey, Bharata, you know, the one who really holds this whole tradition. This being the case, he says, Tan Titikshaswa. Please just accommodate them. Titiksha. That's the advice. And it's the most obvious advice. The idea is this. This is how it is. What are you going to do about it? Do you think that you can change the nature of the universe? You can't. You can't take any given experience and freeze it and believe that believe at all that it's going to last. So any experience, positive or negative, it's going to come and go. That's the nature of experience. If that's the nature of experience, for you to ask it to be otherwise is to beat your head against the wall. That being the case, when that is the nature of the universe, you need to learn accommodation. No? Titiksha is one of the attributes, one of the qualities for a mumukshu. You know, there's four major qualities. The viveka, all of these qualities, all of the qualities that make up a mumukshu allow for the titiksha. So let me just go through quickly. The viveka. Viveka means when I'm looking out, because I don't have jnanam, I don't have knowledge yet, as a mumukshu, I come to the teaching with some qualities, with some understandings. First understanding, viveka, I have realized this. I've realized this. That everything is subject to change. Everything comes and goes. All my experiences come and go. All of them are time-bound. I've realized this clearly. And in realizing that, I realize that because of that, The sorrow may come and go, but the happiness also comes and goes. Right? And so therefore, because I realize that, I go to the next qualification, which is vairagya. The vairagya means that once I realize the anityatvam, the non-eternality of all experience, including this body, including all the thoughts in my mind, my sense organs, all of my perceptions, I realize the non-eternality of it. In that realization comes the next realization that, therefore, this universe that I'm experiencing through my sense perception is not capable of giving me any type of lasting happiness because there's nothing in it that's lasting. And it's a 1 plus 1 equals 2. You see the one, then you see the other. Your mind goes from, oh, I see this, and then it can't help but see this. And when it sees this, that therefore this universe cannot really give me what I'm seeking to be a whole and complete person. Because we don't want just temporary moments of happiness. We would like to just say, I'm all is well with me. We realize we cannot get that through the fulfillment of desire because of the time-bound nature of things. So then the vairagya comes in. The vairagya is this. This world can't give me what I'm really desiring. And so once I see that, I no longer have the same, I can't have the same energy or the same level of desire for the things that I know can't solve what I'm seeking. They can't give me what I'm seeking. When something can't give you what you're seeking, you lose interest in it, in a sense. It doesn't have the same, won't hold you in the same way. That's the vairagya. You may have a desire for something, you know, like if I'm thirsty, I have a desire for a glass of water. If I want to watch TV, then I'd like to have my TV working, that type of thing. But those are secondary desires. The desire to be whole and complete that most people have, I want to be whole, I want to be full, I want to be complete, so let me have this, let me gain this, let me do this. That I gain vairagya there, because I realize that that won't do it. I won't get what I'm seeking. So that vairagya comes. Now, when the vairagya comes, you know, also the fourth desire, the mumukshutvam, can rise. Because if I realize nothing in the universe can give me that sense of wholeness, nothing that I can do can fulfill me that way, then I don't have a solution. And I feel bound because I don't have a way out. Before, I had a way out. If I just did this or if I just did that, now I don't have a way out. So I feel bound. I become a mumukshu, right? One who desires liberation. And so then that becomes what I'm seeking. That's my desire. I desire freedom and I want somebody to help me solve that problem. That becomes the primary desire. When that's so, these states of mind, titiksha being one of them, the shamadhi shatka, shama dhamma uparati titiksha shraddha samadhanam, there's six of them. The shama and dhamma, really shama has to do with the ability to dismiss thoughts, so the thought doesn't really have the ability to grab me or take me over. I just like you have thousands of thoughts passing through, and you have some choice over not whether or not that you want that thought to park. You know, you could say no thanks, and it can, you know, that's shama. Dhamma is when the thought does park in spite of yourself, and grabs you. Dhamma is the ability to be able to hold that, to contain it, to deal with it without acting out. That's what dhamma is. Very simple. The thought has grabbed me, the mood, the emotion has grabbed me, but I can be with it, I can deal with it, and it doesn't cause me to act out in the world, verbally or abusively or physically. I'm able to deal with it internally. That's dhamma. Uparati. Uparati is that single-pointedness in terms of what I'm pursuing. Once I have that viveka and vairagya, then if that is truly there, the single-pointedness of the mumukshutvam is, the mumukshutvam is solid. My direction is solid because there's no place else to go. Right? If the viveka vairagya is not clear, then the upadati, that single-pointedness of pursuit, is not clear because I kind of see, you know, I kind of want this liberation and everything, you know, but I also want this and this and this. So I haven't really realized I haven't really understood the situation. So upadati is for somebody who has viveka and vairagya, then they have sannyasa buddhi. They might not have taken orange, but the buddhi, the attitude, is one of sannyasa. Means your interest is in gaining knowledge. That's what sannyasa is. The interest is not in this or this or this. The interest is in gaining knowledge, right? And then all of this becomes your sadhana. It's not that you don't love if you have family and all of that. You love and you love your friends and you love your work and all of that. But what is primary is jnanam, is self knowledge. And all of your relationships and all of the problems that are there just in living life, and all the problems that are there in relationships. I mean, there is not a relationship that doesn't have problems. Relationships also have sukha and dukkha, right? They also have a continuum in every relationship, on every level, you know. But then for you, for the mumukshu, those relationships are sadhanas, you know. Sadhanas for what? How can I have titiksha? Titiksha is that ability to accommodate. You know, it's such a beautiful, the master of titiksha, in my experience, is Swamiji. Titiksha, because some people translate it as endure. It's not endure. Yeah. I have to endure the cold. Now I have to endure the heat, and endure this person, endure that person. It isn't that. It's accommodation. Accommodating the variety of expression of Bhagavan, of Ishwara. You know, there are so many different types of people. Different types of situations, different types of hurts and problems that the variety of people have, that everybody's trying to work out in this way. There's all hundreds of rubs, hundreds of things going on. Titiksha is the ability to accommodate all of that, to just let it be, to let the people be as they are, and for yourself not being pulled into some sort of a negative engagement with it, you know. Last Thursday I was at this, it was kind of a commons for a group of students. And so a lot of the master students that were there, there's about 20, 25, 30 students there at this one professor's house, and we were all there. It was kind of like a little party we have every semester. And so there's one student who is, he's a character student, and he's very taken with himself, and he tends to dominate the situation, whatever's going on. He tends to really dominate. He'll talk a lot and just pontificate on and on. But this was last semester. It was a huge problem. This kid, you know, this man, and all of the students were, "How are we going to handle this?" And so they would talk to him. The professors kind of talked to him, and this is a nice boy. He's just, you know, has this problem. And so this guy has really worked on it. Really, still that way, but he's really, really worked on it. Okay, and so at the party, this little party, we were all sitting around in a circle and everybody was kind of contributing what was going on with them. You know, it's kind of a share and tell type of thing. And so this young man starts and pontificating. And yes, that's just how he is. But he checked it. He didn't go on and on. He only did it for maybe 4 or 5 minutes, or even 3 or 4 minutes. And I could see all the students were kind of bracing themselves. But later, one boy, a couple of days later, one boy came and talked to me as one of my students, and he was kind of talking about some situations. And he said, "You know what, that party?" I said, "Yeah, yeah." And he said, "Well, you know when so-and-so started talking again?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I just got so irritated. I just can't stand it sometimes." And he said, "Then, you know, I looked over at you and Danielle." Danielle's the other professor there. He said, "And you were all just looking at him and smiling and engaged." He goes, "How can you do that?" He said, "Well, you know, he's really changed a lot. Did you notice that? This fellow has really changed a lot. Did you notice that?" And he said, "Yeah, I really did notice that." Yeah. But I was thinking, you know, this is not necessarily a compliment to myself or to my colleague. We're kind of the professors there. We're interested in our students, and a student has a pontificating, you know, this is how he is. He's a young man, and he's working on it, you know. But, of course, the students are, you know, they have a different relationship. Right? But that's the difference between titiksha and not having the titiksha. When you don't have the titiksha, this person is behaving in a certain way, and it's like, you have the titiksha, you know, and this person is behaving like that, and you try to help, you know. If the person is getting out of control, then say if you're a faculty member or something, then you try to help and direct it. But there's no engagement. Because this is one of the infinite variety of situations that there are. See what I mean? It's not possible. It's not possible to get a situation where everybody's a cookie cutter of what you might expect humanity, the ideal Swargaloka, to be. That's the difference. In fact, just think of this. If it were Swargaloka, wherever you are, everybody is exactly how you want them to be. And so you are with these people, and, "Oh, this person is so wonderful. This is what a wonderful, beautiful person. What beautiful flowers. What a beautiful home, you know? I'm so glad I live in this beautiful, beautiful town." It goes on and on like that. Everything is perfect, perfect, perfect.
The Twilight Zone.
It's wonderful. I'm so happy. That's not this loka. This loka has nothing to do with that. This loka is punya papa, pleasure, pain, all of the opposites. And your task is to gain the titiksha. Otherwise, you're samsari. If you're samsari, that means you are engaged in trying to make everything work out. Impossible. It's impossible. And finally, you roll over and die. you roll over. Finally, you become a mumukshu. That's what I mean. Yeah. You just, okay, I give up. Come on, save me. And you realize that you can't make it into a Swargaloka. And so then, you know, you start realizing what the problem is that in fact you cannot gain what you're seeking from the world, no matter how it is. No matter how it is. In this world, right, no matter how it is, even if it's perfect for you, it'll be perfect for a snapshot, that's all. Because everything is changing. When you realize that, you become a mumukshu, and then because of great punya, you become a jignasu, one who has realized that it's the problem for the solution for this desire for liberation is knowledge. Once you realize that and you gain a teacher, and this knowledge is taking place, you know, then you're set. This world is a sadhana. It's your sadhana. Your sadhana for what? Titiksha. You know? Titiksha. So that, and when that titiksha is there, that titiksha comes as you gain knowledge. Because as you gain knowledge, the fullness that your mind requires, that sense of well-being that it requires, it gains from yourself. As it gains that experientially, resting in yourself, recognizing and recognizing also the Swarupananda, the very being of yourself, the fullness of your very being, and your mind resting in yourself, then the value of the mind changes from trying to manipulate the environment to trying to accommodate the environment so that your mind is relaxed. If you accommodate the environment, your mind is relaxed. If your mind is relaxed, it's like the still water bucket reflecting the sun, right? And so when the mind is relaxed, its experience is of ananda. So for the mumukshu, the more that we relax and enjoying our own presence, the more ananda the mind feels, right? And also, the more that we gain knowledge and understanding, that titiksha, titiksha means I'm not asking the universe to be a particular way. The less I'm asking the universe to be a particular way, the more I'm able to appreciate the universe as it is, which is Ishvara. Right? I'm able to appreciate all of this as a whole, as Ishvara, and be very interested in it. It's hard to be interested in Ishvara or in the creation if I need it to hop to accommodate, to do what I need it to do in order to be happy. Then I'm not so much appreciating Ishvara as I'm begging Ishvara to please fix this, fix this here and fix that there and fix this here and there so that I can be happy. I don't see anything wrong with that, actually, because the more a person is in relationship with Ishvara, the better. The more that recognition of Ishvara, the better. But what I'm saying is that as a person matures in the light of this knowledge, we don't find ourselves needing to ask Ishvara for so many things, because I don't want so many things. I don't tend to want more than what I already have. Right? Because what is the source of your happiness? That's the thing. Another thing to understand about that, so I hope I'm not confusing you, but every moment you have so much, you have what you have. You've got this body, you've got the clothes you're wearing, you've got how much money you've got in the bank, you've got how many friends you have, with your family, you've got so many situations. You've got all kinds of stuff going on. It's absolutely full. This is what you have at this moment, you know. And all the way through life, you have so much. You don't have everything. You have so much, right? And so, since you have this set of things, you have this set. Let me put it this way: I have this set of things. You have this set of things. You have this set of things. You have this set of things. That's how it is. I can't have my set of things and your set of things and your set of things, your set of things. I can't have all the different sets of things. We can't fit them all in. It's not possible. So that's why, you know, that one time Swamiji said, you know, to me, I was probably complaining about something I didn't have. He said, you know, you have to be grateful for what you do have and not worry about what you don't have. Because what you don't have is infinite. It's too long of a list of what you don't have. It's too long of a list, you know? And if you take it to knowledge now, all of these things that you do have, that's all part of your prarabdha. That is yours. It's yours. It's what is here for you. This is yours. You have it, right? Nobody can take away from you what is yours. And so, in fact, what is yours is right here then for you to relate to. And how should you relate to it? Well, it's sadhana. Sadhana, what does that mean? Relate to it from, I learned to just relate to it as Ishwara and to respond in the best way that I can to all the situations that are in front of me. And what is the best way to respond is out of, is from my knowledge. Right? And so everything, every moment becomes a sadhana. And so, but what Krishna says here is this tan titikshaswa, it's imperative case. You know, may you accommodate. This is how the world is. Learn to accommodate it. The jnani, now, this is the other thing. This is going to be through all the way through the Gita. The jnani, the one who has self-knowledge, naturally accommodates. Because I'm beyond the nirvana, this is Ishwara. So it's natural for that, for the mind to accommodate, for the one whose knowledge is complete. But what is what we call sadhya, or natural for the jnani, is sadhana for the mumukshu. Right? That becomes sadhana. Because you know, as soon as that viveka vairagya is there and you're exposed to knowledge, you know. And so when your mind is behaving in a way that is making you miserable, the difference is between you and a samsari is that you have that misery that's taking place, that sorrow that's taking place, the buildup that's taking place in the mind, is being held by your knowledge, by your understanding, right? And so you know what's going on. Because you know what's going on, you know the habitual behavior of the mind and different problems in the unconscious, you know the whole thing, and you know what the reality is. The reality is that I'm the ananda that I'm seeking. And that the only thing that really gives that to me in terms of mental state is when the mind is quiet and relaxed. In terms of my own being, nothing gives it to me. I'm never not that. It's in terms of my own being, whether or not my mind is happy or sad doesn't make any difference. Because my own presence is there containing that. And my presence is not happy or sad, it's ananda. Right? And so that ananda is constant, containing whatever the happy or sad mind, whatever is going on in the mind. But then, the sadness, or the reactions, or the buildups in the mind, those are psychological things. That's either because of lack of vairagya, there's something in a certain situation, I mean, you'll have vairagya in some situations, and you won't have a vairagya or dispassion in others. And so where there isn't, then you'll find your mind getting engaged and reacting and upset and, you know, this person is stopping me, or this person's doing that to me, or this person's hurting me in that way, or this has happened. And but then you, if you analyze it and you say, you know, what is it that is really upsetting me about this? What's really going on? And talk to yourself and see what the problem is. Or see if there's a, if there's childhood things going on. Talk to the child inside. And see what's really causing the upset in the light of your knowledge, right? Your knowledge, in fact, gives you so much freedom to be able to totally be with these problems and deal with them. Because yourself doesn't have a problem, right? And your mind, yourself, has no problem. And your mind can turn from happiness to sorrow, from sorrow to happiness on a dime. You know, it's not like we have to bring out the scrub brush for the mind, you know? A change of, just a simple change of attitude, change of behavior to the mind just changes, relaxes, just needs to relax. So Swamiji used to tell me that. I remember when in the 80s, early 80s, I was running, administrating this course in Sandeepani West, and there was this one person there that used to just drive me up a wall. This person would just make me so upset. I cannot remember why. Nevertheless, just to make me so angry and irritated. So I used to go to Swamiji and say, what can I do? This person's making my life miserable. You know, I can't handle it. What is it? What should I do? You know? He said, you do one thing. A lot of you have heard this before, but it's worth hearing 100 times. You do one thing. You do one thing. Whenever you see that person, it's to be a lady, you just go up and smile and say hello. Nothing more. And then walk away. You know? Yeah. Gosh darn it, that was the hardest thing for me to make myself do. I did not want to do that. And I resisted it. But then finally, I was able to make myself do that. And when she was cooking, I walked up and said, you know, hi, how are you? And she looked around and smiled and said, hi, and talked about the food she was making or something. And, you know? And before I walked up, I had all of this tension and this whatever it was, something inside. It's awful, you know, when somebody's irritating you. And you know what? It's not like there was no scrub brush. I said, hi, how are you? She said, hi. And told him, said something, and there was no problem. Just like that, it was gone. And it kind of blew my mind. Mm-hmm. Because then I saw the whole dynamic. Then the thing is, of course, you know, within a few hours, that whatever was wrong in that relationship came up again. But I had learned the next time it wasn't so hard to do that, to walk up and say that. And same thing happened. And so actually, after a few times, I'll always be grateful to this person for this. After a few times, I learned the trick of it. That if there's a catch, if you have a catch inside, in reference to, say, it's usually a person, it's not usually a chair or something.
This darn chair.
It's usually a person, some sort of relationship, you know. If you take a step forward, a mini step forward, you know, it will break it in you on a physical level or on an internal level. And the wonderful thing about this is sadhana. This is what sadhana is about. Because what you learn is how to handle your mind, how to keep your mind clean. This is when we talk about purity of mind or cleanliness of mind. This is all we're talking about. A mind that's clean of this hatred or anxiety or you know, going round a problem. How to handle the mind doesn't have to do with the other person. You know, so what I mean by that is, okay, this person was, for whatever reason, I had something with her. It's causing me terrible problem. Other people had no problem with her at all. I would see her talking with other people and just laughing and carrying on and having a fine old time. It's just that her dynamics, her internal complexes and problems, and mine, when we got together, it was not nice. There was some tension there. And you find, look in your own relationships. Some people, and it's a big world, right? For the most of the people, there's no problem. There's just Joe Blow over here and this person over here, and your mind is Shanti. There's no problem at all. But in this group of people, say, just think of the panorama of people, out of that panorama of people, there might be a handful that you have a problem with, and that handful, the whole huge other group will have no problem with it whatsoever. But they'll have a problem with another group. You see what I mean? Everybody has a problem with somebody. Because of the complexes. Our baggage, our complexes are rubbing. Right? And if there's just an infinite number of combinations. And some people, the complexes rub in a positive way. Where you kind of soothe each other's hurts. For other people, other combinations, the complexes run in a negative way, where you don't soothe each other's hurts, you excite each other's hurts, right? And then in some people that are your friends, for the most part, you will soothe each other's hurts and kind of help each other's good sides. And in the minority part of the relationship will be the rubs, you know? So if you think that that's how it is, that's how it is. And so your task as a mumukshu or as a jignyasu is to learn how to help your mind gain the titiksha so that you can let the people be, all the people with all of their complexes, right? And you're included in that, right? I'm included in it. You have to be able to let all of the people be with all of their complexes and let us be with our complex also, right? But we know how to be with it. That's the difference. You know how to be with it. And the way that you know how to be with other people, you know how to be with yourself. You know how to do all of the type of self-talk. You know who you are, you know, in terms of yourself. You know what the dynamics of ananda is. You know, the relaxed mind, you know, is the mind that reflects yourself. You know all of this. And so that means that you have all of the skills you need to give, to work with your mind, to gain that natural skill of being at peace with the world. It's very hard, if not, it's very difficult to be at peace with the world completely without self-knowledge. If you have self-knowledge, then your mind has its changeless source of ananda, and so it doesn't require anything of the world. No. If you don't have that changeless source of ananda, you have to be very, very, very mature to have your primary attachment be dharma, right? Then you can have a certain relative amount of shanti. If you have self-knowledge, then that dharma becomes natural. So, but it becomes natural because you have the viveka and vairagya, and your primary commitment is toward, you know, yourself. The mind's abiding in the self. So that's kind of how it goes. So this verse is... it's very, very complete. In just two lines, we kind of just tells exactly what the situation is. So let's read the next verse, because he sums it up in the next verse.
Yam hi na vyatayan cheti Yam hi na vyatayan cheti Ete purusham purusharshapa Ete purusham purusharshapa Samadukasukam dhiram, samadukasukam dhiram, somratatvaya kalpate, somratatvaya kalpate.
He says, yam, under the Sunday, yam hi na vyatayanti ete purusham purusharishapa, sama dukkha sukham dhiram saha amritatvaya kalpate. He says, the one whom yam, he, because yam, the one whom na, I'll look at he in a minute. The one whom na vyatayanti, third person, plural, ete, these, nominative plural, purusham, yam purusham, which person, these, do not rattle. The person whom these don't shake up or rattle or agitate. That person, he purusharshapa, he bull among men. Bull among men is way of address, meaning you who really are exalted among all of the human beings. You are an exalted person. So hey, bull among men, talking to Arjuna. It's that person whom these sense contacts, they don't shake, they don't rattle, okay, they don't agitate. That person, sama dukkha sukham, the one who remains the same in sukha and dukkha, means events that are meant to cause pleasure and pain. The one who remains the same in events that are pleasurable and events that are sorrowful, causing meant to cause pain. Okay, so the one sama means the same, sukha dukkha. So sama dukkha sukham, the one is bahuvrihi, for whom sukha, literally bahuvrihi, for whom sukha and dukkha are the same. Okay, sama dukkha sukham dhiram, that one who has wisdom, the buddhi, who's solid in this knowledge. That one who has this knowledge, that person, that dhira, who is clear on this, who remains the same in sukha and dukkha, for whom these sense contacts are not able to rattle, that person, saha, he says, saha amritatvaya kalpate, that person is qualified for immortality. Amritatva, mrita means mortality, amritatva, that state of being immortal, free from death. Right? So, because it's that person who's recognized the problem. As a mamukshu, they're qualified for gaining knowledge, right? If they have knowledge, then they have that amritatva already. The person who has knowledge, they have that recognition, I am free, right? Because that's the nature of myself. So they own that. But the mamukshu, the one who has the viveka and the vairagya, right, who works with this world as a sadhana, this is not, the fulfillment of these desires is not primary for me. What is primary for me is being whole and complete, no matter what is happening. That's what's primary. And so for the mamukshu, the jignasu, the one who desires knowledge, for that person who the world is not able to shake, because relatively they have that titiksha, right? The ability to accommodate. But the ability to accommodate is because I know there's something more. My mind knows there's something more. And so what can shake me in the world becomes a sadhana, because my primary interest is for that amritatva, the recognition of myself as being timeless, right? Recognition of the ananda in myself. So that person, which Krishna is saying here, you know, that's that person who has the titiksha. If you have the titiksha, then all of these sense contacts are not able to shake you. And it's that person who has that degree of vairagya, then that is really, that this vairagya, this passion, is really able to own this knowledge. Right? But you have to understand that when a person gains knowledge, they can also really, if once you gain knowledge, you have nishta in that knowledge, you can also have that vairagya and understanding and compassion toward your own mind, which is not displaying vairagya at the moment. Right? That's knowledge. That's nishta. The nishta, the knowledge, the vairagya, the viveka, the vairagya, the recognition of self is true toward the whole world, which includes your body and mind and sense organs and all the little ones inside. So the one who's able to not be shaken by all of this, including you, that one is qualified for, that kalpate, that one's qualified for this amritatva, this state of being, of freedom, of recognizing the one who never changes. Mrita means that one who dies, mortality. Amrita, the one who is free from death. It's just the name for the Atma. Amritatva, that state of being free from change, free from death. Okay, so we'll stop there. These two sentences, you can see the two verses go together. Just take a minute.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.